It is now time for our featured speaker of the evening. Ladies and gentlemen in attendance, and sober alcoholics around the world, it's sober time! And we would like to welcome you all to Strathmore, California. And so, with all the earnestness at your command, will you welcome, please, from the Valley of the Bears, Los Osos, California, it's Craig A.
That's a lot.
My name's Craig. I'm an alcoholic. I swear I went into a diabetic coma watching that auction go by. Brent did a great job with the auction. Thanks very much. I last two New Year's, I was emceeing our Alano Club's New Year's Eve event in the No Talent talent show they have over there. And I guess they wanted to have a No Talent speaker meeting tonight. And so Julie, for some reason, got my card and asked me to come here. I was the chairperson of San Luis Obispo's last year 49th annual 22nd District AA convention. And I guess she liked the way I read the preamble or something and said, hey, why don't you come and talk in Strathmore? I don't know. Don't know how that happened, but here I am, and I'm a whole lot of applause. I'm really happy to be here. I don't know where the poor judgment came from, but I am. It was a great opportunity for me to come over and see my my old college roommate, Ed, who lives in Visalia, so I get to stay with him. We were college roommates in the 90s and gravitated towards him in AA as a seeking lower companionship then, and I've just stuck with that lower companionship ever since, and I don't know, now here I am. I really want to welcome the few newcomers that were here tonight. I truly and sincerely hope, if I say one thing sincere, I'm usually glib and contrarian, I just like to be that way, but I sincerely hope that you are so goddamn miserable, you're on the verge of homicide or suicide, and you have nowhere left to turn and no other options, and maybe you'll try it our way. Maybe you're willing to take actions that you know have absolutely nothing to do with your problems. And I know you know what your problems are and you think you got a solution but just can't quite put that together. Try it this way. Son of a bitch, it works. I don't know how, but it does. My favorite AA story is about the newcomer, goes to the old timer, says, you got to help me with my battle with alcohol. Old timer says, the battle's over, you lose. And that was it. That was it. It was that simple for me. Didn't know it. The paradox of that surrender to win. Here's where I apologize for my story to those of you who might have a little bit of fight in you, a little bit of toughness in you. When I was in the sixth grade, it happens to most young men, and most of the men in here will know this or remember this. About the time you hit puberty or adolescence, I don't know why it happens, but it's just about that time young men, they square off against one of their peers. Don't know why it happens. Wasn't conscious. I was in sixth grade, and it just came time to throw that first punch, to establish the pecking order of the really tough guys. Who's the toughest guy? And it's not even conscious, but it's just chosen. And I was probably always 6'4", maybe weighed about 65 pounds, and I was always teased. But I mean, it was awkward, and whatever it was. And for some reason, it was me and Tarek Saba, and we were going to go at it on the block behind in front of Adam's house. Didn't choose it, but it was just that time, and so we squared off. I tried to throw a punch, don't know where it missed, and he got me in a headlock and started pulling my hair till I cried, and then he let go of me and I ran home, and that's the only fight I've ever been in my entire life. I have not thrown a punch since. I learned right then what my tolerance for pain and fear is. I am the biggest pussy ever. So So when I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, facing 13 felony counts of credit card fraud, because I love smoking cocaine, my favorite thing to do, I got taken out of my photo class at University High School in Irvine in handcuffs because they found a pound of dope rolled up for distribution. I'd stolen my mom's van in a blackout out of her garage and rolled it on the I-5 without a seatbelt on down a Dana Point turn, walked away from that. Me and my Mexican buddy Wilbur Valencia were down Cinco de Mayo 1988 in Tijuana celebrating Mexican independence, and in a blackout I got thrown in Tijuana jail there, and I came back, it just, the surrender came really, really easy for me. Here is my alcoholism to me. Currently, it's in December of 2016, the United Nations has determined, calculated, whatever it is, that there are 7.5 billion people in population here on our planet. It's 7,500 million people. Yet I wake up every single morning with the absolute conscious conviction that it's all about me. No doubt about it. You can check with me. It's a sincerely held belief that I carry right here. It's an earnest neurosis. I wake up, I know it's about me, and I'm worried every single day. It has, I haven't drank in a long time, and yet I know I'm alcoholic. Alcoholic to me has absolutely nothing. I mean, I had 12 years of sobriety, and then I hit, that summer from 6th grade to 7th grade. And Salt Creek Beach Park down in Dana Point. My buddy Wilbur Valencia, a few years before Tijuana, had a bottle of Jim Beam, and I choked that poison down after sniffing and taking a sip. Just plugged my nose and drank it down, and I immediately comprehended the word serenity, and I knew peace. And that feeling of uselessness and self-pity went away immediately. Me and my friend Brett, we're secret card-carrying members in AA of the Loved Too Much Club. I'm an only child, came from a non-broken home. My mother, born and raised in Bakersfield, is an only child from a non-broken home. Her fourth step up until her 50th birthday consisted of, when she was 16 years old, went down to a department store, took two bikinis into the changing room, put one on, put the clothes back on, put one bikini back on the changing rack, went home with her new bikini underneath, woke up the next morning, put her bikini on, put her clothes back on, went back to the department store, into the changing room, and took the bikini back off and put it on the rack because she felt so guilty. My father ran away when he was 16 because he was abused living out on Highway 66 on Victorville, Hellendale area in the 50s. So he ran away and he was a self-made man. He did what was right even when no one was looking. So I don't know how. And yet, even before I started drinking, when I was in the sixth grade, it all happens right around adolescence, Mom took me down to the Vans shoe store to get a new pair of shoes, and I remember seeing this really beautiful pair of slip-on Vans, and they were neon, they blue, they had toucans and mangoes dripping off them, they were just the most god-awful ugly things ever, and I wanted these shoes so bad. And I got these shoes, and I had gone to this school from kindergarten through sixth grade in Laguna Hills, and I knew everybody, gone to summer camp with them, I was friends with them all, and I put on these shoes and went trucking off to school the next day, and that popular group that stands over there, that I knew every one of them, and I could be friends with everyone on the corner in the quad, but I just never quite fit in with that group of people. And somebody in that group saw me coming across the quad with these shoes, and they said, "Hey, look at Craig's shoes. Aren't they lame?" or whatever it was. And everybody turned around and started teasing me about my shoes. And I went over and stood behind the sandbox where no one could see my shoes till the bell rang. Everybody went to class, and I ran home crying. That's just how I fit in the world. And so as soon as I found drugs and alcohol, I was absolutely good to go. On the morning of November 10th, 1988, I had been floating around AA because it was a softer, easier way to go. And, well, Halloween 1988, I was sober exactly 6 months. And there was a guy living in the condominium up above. My parents were sleeping on their couch, and he was having a big party because his parents were out of town. I used to do a lot of stuff with this guy. And but I was sober 6 months. I got my big book under my belt, and I'm ready to go. And they were having a big party, and I went upstairs because it was getting really noisy. And I knocked on the door, and I said, "Hey, you guys, your party's getting real loud. Keep it down." I mean, I got sober 6 months, so don't worry about me. But you guys, it's really loud. Someone's going to call the cops and break up your party. Keep it down. I went back downstairs. It's getting really noisy. Went back up, knocked on the door a second time. "Hey, you guys, really keep it down. It's getting kind of noisy. Someone's going to call the cops and bust up your party. Hate to see that happen." Went back downstairs. Really, really noisy. Go a third time. "Hey, you guys, really keep it down." I go back down. Fourth time, go back up and knock. "Hey, you know, load me a bong rip and give me a beer." Got drunk and had that head full of AA, belly full of booze, which just didn't work, and it was insanity. So I went back to AA meeting the next morning to confess my sins, you know, go in peace. And this guy, Tom, said, "Hey, I went out too. Let's go." Took all my cash, and we hit the road and headed off to Vegas. So the morning of November 10th, 1988, I got about $200 left in my pocket. And it was 20 days after my 18th birthday. And me and Tom head outside the Clark County lines there. Outside the Clark County lines in Las Vegas proper, they got buildings they put out in the middle of the desert. Some of them have airstrips. Sun goes down, they flick on a little red light, and as long as you got money, there's a party there. And so me and Tom go off with our cash, and we end up at one of those buildings driving around, just all wasted, and, you know, my last of my cash, made some friends. And so, God willing, November 10th will be the last time I ever take a drink, use a drug, or catch the crabs ever again. And I did. I came back from Vegas. Went back to the Tuesday night beginners meeting at the Raymond Club in El Toro and raised my hand again as a newcomer. And there was a very unsightly gentleman who always sat on the corner every Tuesday night there. And he'd always say, "There's nobody I'd rather be but me." You know, he was just... He just saw. He came up to me, and, "You know, Craig, you don't have to drink anymore if you don't want to." And, you know, he goes, "What you're going to do is you're going to come to my home group. It's the Wednesday night Mission Viejo Missionaries Discussion Group. It meets corner of Oso and Marguerite Parkway every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock, and you'll be there." So I went to that meeting. It's November. And it was different than all the Alano Club meetings I've been going to. Alano Club meetings, you know, a lot of homelessness, a lot of low bottom drunks, a lot of mental health issues, you know, which is perfect for it. This meeting was different. This meeting was twice as big as this meeting is here. Everybody was wearing a brand new three-piece Armani suit, seemed to me. Everybody pulled up in their brand new $100,000 Mercedes. Everybody just came from their 27-room Tudor mansion house. They were all sober 1,000 years. They all sat around and they were throwing Skittles at their friends, and it was alive with energy, and it had just the semblance of a home group. It was just alive with energy and sobriety and recovery. And so that meeting went on, and they stopped the meeting about 15 minutes early to avoid conflict with the holidays, and they elected new service positions, and they went through and they elected a new secretary, new treasurer, new GSR, new intergroup, new grapevine rep, chairperson, celery stick person. They went through and did the whole thing, and afterward the secretary said, "We've been getting complaints from the church about stray cigarette butts. Does anybody want to..." Ken grabbed my hands and said, "Craig will do it." And the whole room burst out into applause. I was elected butthead with, you know, two days sobriety for this meeting. It's kind of where the, you know, "I hope you're so desperate you'll do things that you don't have nothing to do with your problems." After the meeting, it was, I remember it as clear as day. It was very, very patronizing the way Ken walked me around the church grounds there. The meeting was from 8:30 to 10 o'clock every Wednesday night, so it's late. And he's walking me around the church grounds, showing me where I'm going to police the area, where the Folgers cans are strategically positioned around the building and at the pylons and at the parking lot. how I'm going to put water into the cans before I then take the cans to the dumpster and dump them all in where I'm going to store the Folgers cans. And specifically said, what you're going to do is you're going to show up every Wednesday night for the next 6 months and pick up cigarette butts. And then with that, you're going to show up every Wednesday night for the next 6 months and bring celery sticks and cookies. You know that? You're going to show up every Wednesday night and set up chairs for 6 months. And then you're going to be literature and grapevine and GSR and treasure. And if you serve every single service commitment at this meeting, and you don't drink between Wednesday nights, you'll be over 5 years sober. When I finally moved away from Orange County, I call it the AA college matriculation plan, 9 years for a four-year college degree. When I finally moved away, I was over 5 years sober, and I had served every single service commitment at that meeting except for the two-year general service rep. I have, since November 10th, 1988, well, 11th, I guess, I have always had a home group. In that 9 year for a 4 year college degree and then some more, of, you know, moved 13 different times in sobriety, I've always gotten a home group first. And I've always had a service position, and I've always had a sponsor. I've got many service positions now and rotating some for the new year that's coming. My home group is the Wednesday night open door group. It meets Trinity United Methodist Church in Los Osos, 7 o'clock Wednesday nights, Pine and Los Osos Valley Road. It's the best meeting in the whole wide world, only because I heard somebody say once early on, if your meeting isn't the best meeting in the world, what aren't you doing? Don't know what that means, but Wednesday night open door is the best meeting in the world. Please come. And I have a sponsor. I like to jealously guard his anonymity. It's Ron Scow of Morro Bay. Newcomers, 805-440-0331. He really appreciates calls from frantic newcomers about 2 a.m. 805-440-0331. Give him a call. Loves talking to newcomers at 2 a.m. Perfect. I worked the steps with that first sponsor. I think my experience with the steps has been that it's taken those stupid contrary actions that aren't up here for one purpose only. I mean, if you read the book in We Agnostics, the opening chapter, if you're an alcoholic, you might be suffering from a condition which only a spiritual experience would conquer. You know, we know from the history, that's what happened to Bill. He had a spiritual awakening. He said, here's a spiritual experience. I better go carry this to some other people who can benefit from it. 6 months later, nobody else had gotten sober, and he's depressed and talking to Lois and says, Lois, this isn't working. And Lois says, what do you mean? It's the first time you've ever been sober. And it's really that simple. That's all it is. I mean, I got today. I got today, and I'm not drinking, which is strange because I love drinking. Oh, it's my favorite thing to do. Watching the sugar go by was like the next best thing. I want to eat the whole goddamn pie. No, no. A couple of experiences I have with the steps. The very first time I went through the steps, I did that fourth step, and boy, I had a lot of resentments, and it was just everybody. You know, God, authority figures, teachers, didn't matter. Just listed them all and went all the way through it. And then I had an opportunity when I was about a year and a half sober where I spent about 4 months in the fetal position screaming and crying and begging God to take the pain and the depression away because it was so goddamn tough I couldn't stop it. And I knew that this thing was the only thing that was going to work for me. And so, you know, at morning, and I would say these prayers, and I would run off to a morning meeting and complain about how I can't make the pain and the depression stop. And if one more person says, just start your day over anytime, I'm going to punch them in the face. And then I'd go talk to newcomers and talk to my sponsor, and then I'd go back to home, and I'd take off my clothes and just lay in the fetal position. Just, God, I can't. I'm just dying inside. And go through the steps again. And that second time I did that fourth step, it wasn't about everybody else. It was just about me. It was, I wrote down everything about Craig. Didn't know what it was. It didn't mean anything. But I'm just sitting there, just dying inside, and just trying to be some action. And I wrote down everything about Craig. I put down there, I was 19 years old, but I put down that I smoke, because I smoke cigarettes. I'm immortal when I'm 19, 20, so it doesn't matter. You can smoke. But I just put it down. And then I went on, and it gets to the sixth and seventh step, and says, are we now willing to let God remove all these things which we have admitted are objectionable? Smoke is a dirty habit, it's expensive, but I didn't care. But I knew I couldn't sit there. Yeah, God, sure, I'm willing. Okay. So February 1st, 1990, I threw that pack of Newports. Yes, it was Newports, I confess. Away in the trash can, and didn't smoke for 9 years until I was living in the Bay Area. And a buddy of mine, who was separated from his wife who lived in Seattle, was coming back through to reconcile with her, because he started working on the program again. But in order to get back with her, he had to quit smoking. And he stopped at my house on Friday, and he was leaving on Sunday to head back to Seattle. So he was going to quit smoking on Sunday before he departed my house. But he arrived on Friday, and he told me the story. And I said, that's brilliant. Brotherhood is what this sobriety thing's all about. I'll tell you what, I'll have some cigarettes with you over the weekend, and then I'll quit with you on Sunday. So I started smoking cigarettes again, and every 8 years later, and then quit again and again and again. The same old. But that's how I know I could drink like that just as easy if I don't stay in the middle of this thing. I used to, when I was drinking, I used to raid the neighbor's garage because it was stacked up with Schaefer Light as high as up to the roof. Just brilliant. Keystone and Schaefer Light, just shotgunning that stuff, and he used to raid it. And he was, I guess, wondering where his beer was going. So he started locking his garage door, and he'd lock the side door. And the way that I like to drink and the way I operate is I'd just sneak out of the house. I had one of those hand drills you crank, and I was drilling through the door on the side to get through to the deadbolt to unlock it so I could get in and get some beer. And I'm 15, 16 years old, whatever it was. Because that's just how I'm focused, direct, solve this problem. And so when I got to my ninth step, I had to go back and tell this neighbor that it wasn't his kid that was drilling holes through his door. I'm the one that did it. Went back, I'm in AA now, raw, spiritual path, life, isn't it great? And then when I was almost 2 years sober, the real estate economy took a big dump, and my father had an opportunity and bought me, just took over like on a short sale, a little one-bedroom condominium there. And it was in July 1990, I guess. And it was probably 130 degrees in the shade, not literally, but it was just one of those hot summer days. And I got home, and I was sober, and life is great, and I got my own place, and I'm feeling manic. And so I go in, and I clean up the house, and, I probably wipe down the baseboards and clean the grout and the tile and make the bed into hospital corners, get everything situated just right and feeling good. And I open the sliding glass door, close the screen door, and latch the lock, the little white thing in the bottom there. And I take off all my clothes and lay down on top of my bed. And it's so hot out, and just fall asleep. And I wake up the next morning, and I get this icky feeling. I don't know where it came from. And I immediately look outside, and my screen door had been cut from top to bottom with a razor blade. And someone had come in and ransacked my house, cut all the appliances, the cords, and taken everything out while I'm just laying on my bed, And I felt violated. Oh, boy, did I feel violated. And so I went back to that neighbor where I used to drill in their door, and I said, I came back and I said, I apologize before, but this is what just happened to me, and how I violated, and this is how it made me feel, and so now I know what I did. And so my favorite thing to do now is when someone, friend of mine, usually a sponsee, has seeming adversity in his life, be it he gets burglarized, or a business partner burns him, I love saying congratulations. I absolutely love it. It's the best thing ever. That was the best gift I ever had, to experience a ninth step, to go back and say, this is how I got burned, and this is how it made me feel. Because I'm so goddamn selfish and self-centered. Absolutely no idea what I do to you until I experience it myself. When me and my friend Jeff, we have when we're sitting in meetings and chapter 5 is read, you know, you usually float off, but we focus on it. And we like two things we like to listen to. One is as soon as they say, you know, some of these we balk, we always hit each other and say, take your base. Don't know why. Just do. Listen to chapter 5. And the other is I like listening when the reader reads the 12th step. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. And I always listen for the word the. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. I think it's the most important word for me. I don't know why. But I think without the spiritual experience, it doesn't matter. Because I absolutely know that this is a spiritual malady, a spiritual disease, which is so contrary, doesn't make any sense to me. But here's how that has looked in my life throughout sobriety. I have always been a chronic malcontent. I am not satisfied inside. I'm not at all. Just a little more. A little more something. Maybe a little more pecan cheesecake pie. Whatever it is. Just a little more something. So, you know, even though I had lived in Orange County and got sober at that meeting and stayed there 5 years, when I was, you know, you're not allowed to do anything for your first year, right? Mind you, newcomers? No major decisions in your first year. It's a rule. Except, I don't know, what made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of something like that. But other than that decision, no other decisions in the first year. I don't know. Soon as I turned a year sober, I was sitting in my room in El Toro, California, flipping through a skiing magazine, and in the back, in the classified ads, there it is in big bold letters. Work at Heavenly. Ski for free. If you don't know El Toro, El Toro and Rockfield, that intersection, for all of the 80s and all the 90s, was by far the worst traffic intersection anywhere in Southern California. Had LA beat hands down. Everybody parks on El Toro Road and blocks it. It takes months to get across that thing. Living there absolutely sucks. Every red light, it's the worst. And now that I got a year sober, I'm going to go to Tahoe, work at Heavenly, and ski for free. So as soon as I turn a year sober, I pack up and I head up to Tahoe, get a job at Heavenly. I was going to be a ski lift operator, but all those were filled because I had to go the second weekend. But I got a great opportunity to be a ski instructor. How cool is that? This is going to be great. I'm terribly malcontent, but I'm going to be a ski instructor. And I got that job, and I thought it was going to be the best thing ever. And you know what? It absolutely sucked. Every day, picking up crying, snotting kids off of the snow, and everybody from the Bay Area turns Highway 50 into a parking lot every single weekend. Idiots everywhere. It absolutely sucked. I was so miserable up there. That's when I got that second, fourth step, and I'm fetal position. This didn't fix me, this sobriety geographic. I need to get back to Southern California, get my life back on track, because if I live in the mountains, you know, you get island fever up there, and you know, I even work, you know, the lifts in the wintertime and be a painter or carpenter in the summer, but I got 10 thumbs. I got no skills at all, so that ain't going to work. I got no, this sucks. I need to get back to Southern California. So I went back, moved back, went to junior college, Saddleback Junior College in Mission Viejo. Went back to my home group, got that started. Now I'm getting my life on track, start getting an education, really go do something. And didn't really have any marketable skills to get a job. I figured maybe some extracurricular activities, so I started playing baseball because I used to have a little bit of success as a Ute playing sports. And got down there and you know, went through that and graduated with an AA degree from Saddleback Junior College. You know what you can do with that? Nothing. It absolutely sucked. I thought I was going to get my life on track, but it just sucked. And playing baseball, it's junior college. I mean, you know, you're in the Orange Empire Conference. It's pretty competitive at junior college level. Southern California, I had a lot of success as a pitcher. Set some, you know, some achieved some marks. and had an opportunity to go play a few other places. Someone offered to, pay me like $100 and give me a free hot dog to go play, and I didn't want to do that. Had some university offers and burned those waiting because I'm just, I need to get on with my life. And then last minute, an opportunity came to go and play at the University of Alabama. Roll Tide. Is not this? I'm a Southern California guy. Is this a bitchin' thing? Go play in the SEC, first class the whole way. So I pack up my truck and I head off to Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Got my surfing videos on VHS right there, ready to go. I'm going to take a little culture back there to everyone born on a chicken farm in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. And I got there. And every day we would have first thing, of course, got home group service position sponsor. My sponsor was a guy who had, he was 6'9", 330 pounds, had played for Bear Bryant his last 2 years, and now he was back as our strength and training coach, and he had played for Denver and a bunch of other teams until he parked his car at about 50 miles an hour into a parked fire hydrant, or a fire truck, and so he was my sponsor there, and I'm right in the middle of AA, but I get there, and it's going to be great this time, and go into the locker room beforehand, the big screen TV up above the trophy case, and everyone's sitting around watching the Weather Channel to see if we're going to be practicing indoors or outdoors, and then they would turn the TV to deer hunting or fishing. They didn't want to watch my surfing videos. I don't know why. And then they talk about the 6-point they got, the season before or whatever it was, and rotator cuff surgery, a whole lot of other stuff. And just when I got there, it absolutely sucked. It was the worst thing ever. As soon as the word fixin' made its way into my vocabulary, I knew I had to go. I'm fixin' to go. And I headed back. I 1 year and I was done. So I headed back, but I got to get my degree back on track because I wasn't going anywhere other than playing a little college ball, and I just knew that. And so I applied to Cal State San Marcos and to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo and got both those applications in to transfer in. And I couldn't find out Cal Poly San Luis Obispo for at least a term, but I could get into San Marcos because they just started that university right away. So I decided, all right, I'm just going to go to San Marcos and get this thing going. Got to get life on track. And now I'm really going to start feeling good and get down there. And that was when the Northridge quake had happened. And so all of their funding had been diverted to Northridge. Cal State Northridge, and so we were in portables, and they had some other requirements, and then my units didn't transfer anywhere anyway, and it just living down there really sucked. It sucked. I'm not happy. I needed to go, but I found out I got into Cal Poly, and so I'm going to go up to Cal Poly and get in there. So January 95, right before I found my longtime lower companion Ed, I moved up to San Luis Obispo, get started Cal Poly. What a great school. Of course, it's a great school if you can solve for X. Ain't happening. I transferred into to a social science degree at the California Polytechnic State University. And I graduated with a social science degree from the California Polytechnic State University, San Luis Obispo. That qualified me to ask you if you'd like that supersized. And having my degree really sucked. It was nothing. But I had an opportunity through financial aid work study to work up at the probation department of San Luis Obispo. Can I get your way in? A government job, maybe, a long time you go. So I got a job working the bank caseload for a bunch of probationers, going to the meetings down at the Pioneer Group, down by the train station in San Luis Obispo, and I got this job up there. And then they created a new JSO, Juvenile Services Officer, position over at the juvenile home. I applied for that, and I got that job. So now I got a permanent job, and I'm a graduate. And you know, I take my my new badge as a JSO at the juvenile hall, and I head over to the Alano Club. And hey, guys, isn't it, look at the irony! I used to be in custody, and now I'm guarding the, you know, and I started working there. And working in custody sucks. Especially juveniles. It was the worst thing ever. Absolutely hated it. I thought, once I get this job, but I just absolutely hated it. But I don't solve for X, periodic table, don't know anything about it, photosynthesis, all of that, you know, coding and computers, nothing. 10 thumbs, no adaptable skills to even be a painter. I just, you know, nothing. Just my father's son. And other than my public defender, I'd never known a lawyer. But I took a business law class in junior college. Why the hell not? So I applied to go, because working in probation department sucked, so I applied to go to law school. Don't know anything about it, never been there, but it seems like an esteemable thing to do, the lofty tower, the ivory towers. And so I apply, and I get in, and I head off to Santa Clara University to go to law school, where I think it's going to be the cream of the crop. And it was as petulant and juvenile among my classmates as high school and petty and everything. They'll let anybody into law school if you can pass their stupid test. And law school sucked. I absolutely hated it. But I thought, you know what? I'll get through this, get back to San Luis Obispo, take a vow of poverty, just get going and get a job. So I got out of law school, passed the bar exam, moved back to San Luis Obispo, got a job doing family law, which is what I thought I wanted to do, because I had known someone who had been victimized by a bad former spouse. So I'm going to make a difference in family law. I'm going to make a difference. And I got a job practicing family law. And you know what? It sucked. It absolutely sucked. I could not give my clients justice. I could not even give my clients closure. Could not make the system stop. By the time it was all over, they usually disliked me more than they disliked their ex and the judge, because of having unrealistic expectations of what kind of resolution the system would give them, and no matter how much you... Anyway, I finally got a job and I got a paycheck. Finally got a paycheck, a real paycheck. You know, here I am, 31 years old, finally earning a living, something, got some money coming in. I am a chronic malcontent. I am not happy and content inside. I know that it's alcoholism, but my reaction to a spiritual remedy, just, it's not default. If it was, I wouldn't need you guys. I'd go just live a spiritual life and I'd be free. I cannot do it of myself. So I got this paycheck, and I have always wanted a Hummer, H1. God, since I was this big, I've always wanted a Hummer H1. Smith Volvo dealer right down in the corner, they sell all sorts of Porsches and Ferraris and Lamborghinis. He's got a couple of Hummers over there, and a lot. I've always wanted one. I'm going to do this type of reverse financing lease where I backload the heavy payments toward the end, and I can get it really cheap out front. And I get this Hummer, and it's my daily driver. Now, mind you, it's a purple Hummer, but it was the only one he had available. So I'm driving around in a Barney purple Hummer in liberal San Luis Obispo, California, parking it in front of my law office. And I got to tell you, a Hummer H1 as your daily driver sucks. Absolutely the worst thing ever. It does not fill that hole. But I bet you there's a couple of you in here tonight. If not, you certainly know them. Every Thursday or Friday, and on holidays, different days, people such as yourselves from this locale, from Bakersfield all the way up to Fresno. They load up their really bitchin' trucks and they put their really bitchin' toy haulers on the back and they put their really bitchin' quads and they're all shiny and pretty and they go hauling down the road heading down to the Pismo Dunes. And you see them driving by there on the 101 through San Luis Obispo and they look happy. And they look complete and they look like they're going to be having fun. And I got this Hummer which is just ready made for the dunes. And so I go off and I get a trailer, toy hauler. And I get a dune buggy. And I get a sand rail. And I get a racing quad for me. And I get a quad for my wife. And I get a quad for my daughter. And I load all this shit up and we load everybody in the Hummer and we go hauling off down to the dunes. This sucked. The wind blows down there, sand gets in your ass crack and your sandwiches everywhere. We had, you think you'd try it out first, not me, I'd load up all my shit. It sucked. It was absolutely the most horrible experience. And then the stuff breaks. 10 thumbs. I can't, put gas in it, maybe. I'm not fixing it. I don't know, I can't. And I've got no money left because I'm hawked. So sell all that stuff off. I had an opportunity through some very good fortune and blessings of my father to buy a house in Los Osos. So we buy a house. And, now I pay more in property taxes each month than I paid in rent when I was, a student. And shit breaks and you got to fix it. And it sucks, And it's just there. I wanted to be a pilot. I took some flying lessons. Well, why rent their plane? Go buy one. So I bought a plane. Well, owning a plane sucks. The landing gear pops through. You're responsible. And, just a hangar queen just sits there. Just stop flying. It just sucked. And it just kept going on and on and on. My friend Bill tells that entire story in one sentence. And I had a hole that was shaped like a Porsche. And just tried to fill that puzzle piece with that Porsche, and that wasn't. And I've found the solution here. I found the solution with you people. When I was a year and a half sober there in Tahoe in that fetal position, I believe that I had to build a foundation for sobriety because I was in so much pain that I was forced to take actions that I wouldn't normally do, but I knew I had to do something. And during that time, I studied the Big Book because I didn't have any other answers or options, and I believed you guys that you said the answer's in the book and this is where it is. And so I went through that book and I alphabetized and categorized and colorized and cross-referenced in the margins and my highlighters out and running through, and there are two sentences in that book which when I can apply it, save my life. One of them says, our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depends upon our constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. And it's a very unequivocal statement, constant thought of others. When I'm thinking about Hummers and airplanes and jobs and stuff like that, I am absolutely miserable no matter what, whether I get it or I don't. I am not happy. I cannot be. Don't know spiritual malady. Constant thought of others. When I'm thinking of you, when I'm doing something for you, then I find peace, and maybe I get 15 seconds of that, in a day. And the other one is our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. And both of those are very unequivocal statements, but I cannot revert to those by myself. Cannot do it. Can't self-direct. Can't do it. I need you guys. And, I don't know if, Happy New Year to everybody. My LNM wife has not given me my New Year's resolution list yet, so I'm still wondering, what I'm going to be doing. But I don't know. I do an awful lot of service work these days. My week looks like this. Monday nights, I play in a sober softball team in the community league or no free base. Everybody's got a jersey with the number 12 on the back. And, we do that. I also answer phones for central office. call forwarding. On Tuesday nights, we have a book study with my sponsor and a bunch of guys we sponsor there in Los Osos. Wednesday night is Open Door. Thursday nights were for a long time devoted date nights. I mean, who would have thought that being married you had to work at it? What the fuck is that about? I don't know where that came from, but it snuck up on me at about 8 years or so. You better start working at this if you want to, you know, keep it. So, yeah, but then she joined Al-Anon, and now everything's just been roses ever since. And Friday night's Friday night speaker meeting. Saturday night they have roving speaker meetings. Sunday is service Sunday when they rotate that. We've got the convention committee, and I'm also the supply guy at the Wednesday night meeting. And I had somebody come up to me 2 years ago, because I'm very involved with the convention, just because it's something to do. And they came up and they were sincere when they looked at me and they said, thank you very much for your service. And without even thinking about it, I said, I'm overpaid. I mean, I hadn't heard of nothing new for me, but it just, I heard myself then, I am way overpaid. I'm living on borrowed time. And I cannot self-correct. I was sitting with a friend today who's been sober about 8 years, and he's in a crisis in life about whether he wants to live here, go to Hawaii, move to Mammoth and ski, whatever he wants to do. And he's focused on that, and I lived that story, and I kept trying to tell him, why don't you think about others? That's all you got to do. You think about God's will, but I can't do that to myself. I cannot do it to myself. So I'm really grateful I'm here tonight. I look forward to the band, and thank you all for my sobriety. Thank you very much.